Talking is what I do best.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Molly Glover, Nick Glover, and Tim Wick.
We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we talk with Ricky Robinson of the Tortuga Twins. He tells us about his own particular brand of belief, which he calls connectedness.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I am your host, Molly Glover, joined as always by my co-hosts, Tim Wick.
Hello.
And Nick Glover. We are recording remotely via Skype with our good friend Ricky Robinson of the Tortuga Twins. Hello, Ricky.
Hello.
Yes, that's Ricky Robinson.
How's everybody out there?
What's like your Tortuga name?
Rafael Tortuga.
Rafael Tortuga.
Tortuga Twins.
Rafael was my favorite
generic
Ninja
Latino
Turtle.
And Rafael was your what?
My favorite Ninja Turtle, because he's cool but rude.
Don't you know that story about the Tortuga Twins?
What? I do not.
No, this is totally changing our podcast.
I need to hear this
right now.
All right, so way back when I was doing the Bay Area Renaissance Festival in Largo, Florida, near Clearwater, I was doing it, and Jeff Hall was also doing it. Many people know him as D'Angelo.
Okay.
Well, at the time, I was playing an elf, and he was playing a mime, both non-speaking characters.
Mm-hmm.
And there was the Bay Area Renaissance Festival, which ran for 6 weekends, and then there was the Sarasota Medieval Fair, which ran for 4 days, and they both started on the same first weekend. Well, eventually, Sarasota Medieval Fair started the weekend before. I think it got taken over by or started getting run by Mid-America Festivals, which also runs the Minnesota show.
Yeah.
And so their management team wanted to pull some of the street characters from the Bay Area Renaissance Festival. Well, Jeff and I were like, well, we don't talk now, and we want to talk.
Yeah.
So this was back in 1987, and way back when, no more, but way back when, we looked a lot alike. We'll look at pictures now and go, all right, was that you or was that me? Hard to tell. Especially when he had the same perm.
Oh, yeah.
But so we wanted to be these two twins looking for their lost princess, and we wanted something that sounded kind of good, something kind of ethnic, and we picked Tortuga Twins. It had a nice ring to it. It has a nice ethnicity to it. And at the time, there's an underground comic book called Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
I've heard of that.
Tortuga means turtle.
It does.
And so I took the name Raphael, and he took the name Donatello. Little we know the hell we would go through when the movie came out and the cartoons came out.
Oh, my God, yeah, the movie came out just a couple years later.
So he changed his name to D'Angelo, and that's where we got Tortuga's twins.
So there actually were two of you at one. It wasn't always three, which is...
Well, there were two of us at home.
Yeah.
And then we went on the road, and it was just Ron and I, so there were still two of us.
Mm-hmm.
So when we started all... What was weird, though, is because the timing of the show was different. Whenever I was working with Jeff, the rhythm of the show was different than when I was working with Ron.
Sure.
And because I worked with Ron more on the road...
Ron Bauman, friend of the show, of course.
Friend
is who we mean. Just making sure listeners are following along.
I like that you call me a friend of the show, and I'm like, all right, sure, whatever. And, you know, I don't remember what I was talking about, but anyways, blah, 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 Tortuga.
That's fantastic. I actually always wondered if there was some kind of turtle connection, not a Ninja Turtle connection. I wasn't thinking that.
You know the origin, do you know what, of course you do, because you're you guys, you know what Marvel Comics, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, borrows its origin story from?
Yeah, Daredevil. It's a big Daredevil satire. It's all about making fun of Frank Miller.
So when I watched the new Daredevil, I was hoping there would be some kid with a little turtle.
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
Well, they're making another season. It could still happen.
Yeah.
We'll get on the horn with Marvel.
They're going to squeeze it into Iron Fist in a month or two.
We've done many episodes.
Have you seen the trailer for that?
Series.
Oh, my God, yes. It was pants-tightening. It was really good.
Are we talking about the Iron Fist?
The Iron Fist. Yeah, Molly hasn't seen it yet, so we're gonna watch it when we get home.
I'm excited. I haven't seen it yet. It's exciting. Yeah,
you recognize him, right?
Danny? Yeah, he's Loras, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
From Game of Thrones?
Yeah. From Game of Thrones.
I don't know which one he is.
So, Ricky.
Yeah, the pretty one.
Ricky, you kind of spoke a couple times on the last episode we had with Ron there, but
I believe it was four times.
It was four times. Yes.
Four times.
But our listeners may not be familiar with you as a person as much as they are familiar with your character. So tell us a little bit about yourself. How do you identify? You know, on the religion spectrum, are you an atheist, agnostic, something else?
Nice segue. That was wonderfully done.
You're welcome.
I am, as we talked about it just before the show, I assume I am more of a deist.
Yeah.
Because for me, it's not, there's one, it's not just one religion. I think I believe in a source. I believe in the law of attraction, mm-hmm. however you want to look at that, whether it's the divine source, God, whatever you want to call it, great, all of us one together. However, that is, and religion is man's way to access that. And, you know, I can't speak to as the history of these religions, because some of them you look at and you're like, oh, I don't know if that really happened. Mm-hmm. And some of them are like, oh, yeah, we have this, you know, documentation of this. However, there are certain things that have worked out, certain things that haven't because of the belief in it. Those people who believe in voodoo, weird things happen to them sometimes. It's all the belief. You think this is going to happen to you, so you let this happen to you. In fact, I had heard something about in Catholicism, there is a saint, and it might be Saint Christopher, that they don't believe he actually existed. And I might not be Christopher, but I think it is. However, according to them, there's been so many miracles, they're like, okay, well, then he's a saint.
Because, interesting.
Yeah.
How so much of that do
me,
you think?
It's the belief.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, just for me, it's the belief. How much of that do I think what?
I was going to say, how much of that do you think, I mean, obviously you have interest in science and, you know, reason and things like that. How much of that do you think is confirmation bias versus the actual divine reaching out and, you know, speaking to or through someone?
So when you say it like that, it sounds a lot more airy-fairy. I'm a big fan of science.
Yeah.
I am pro-science. I believe in science. And if I want to talk to religious people, Christian people, it's like, first of all, you know, God, in how you believe him, would not have created or allowed something like that to happen. And it just, well, I'm just going to let it happen, and it's dumb.
Sure.
You know, so don't believe in that. It's like, that doesn't make any sense. So, but for me, it's almost like looking at light. When you look at it, it's a particle. When you don't look at it, it's a wave.
Hmm.
So it's all about your perspective. You know, is part of it confirmation bias? Sure, of course. Are you actually pulling stuff towards you? Are things actually happening? It depends on who you talk to. It depends on which studies you look at. Some of there was a study about some kind of mechanical chicken or something that moved a certain way. Every so many steps it would go right, so many steps it would go left. And they put it inside of a chicken coop with all these little chicks, and the chicks bonded with it. And they set it outside of the chicken coop, and then all of a sudden it's like, well, it's doing more turns towards the chicks than it would normally have done. So what's the deal with that?
Hmm.
Now, is this study an actual thing? Is it BS? Is it? Can you do it again? That's the big question.
Right.
And the thing is, what do you want to believe? Well, what actually makes your life richer? You know, I don't want to believe a lie. That hurts other people, even though if that would make my life richer. But if it allows me, I'm sorry, I'm jumping around a lot.
No, it's fine.
I have a lot of Christian friends at home, and I grew up with these people, and I know they are loving and caring people. And yet I see them, the things that they're saying online, and I'm like, oh, that's not very nice.
Yeah.
When I went to college, I had a lot of my belief system ripped away because of the things that I found out historically and things like that. I don't necessarily want to rip theirs away. I don't feel the need to go up and go, hey, you're wrong, this and this and this and this and this. It's like, mm-hmm. look, if that makes your life wonderful, have at. Have a wonderful life. I'm going to believe the way I believe.
I don't want to put words in your mouth, but from what you're describing about kind of attributing some unknown or unexplainable yet phenomena to something spiritual, and clearly, you know, you're not saying all mysterious or magical or unsolvable things are religious or spiritual in nature. It sounds like you could be talking about some sort of spiritual placebo effect, where people will an effect into existence with their belief, and that could be a measurable thing, and it might not be magical, or it in your opinion, it might be magical or supernatural, whatever you want to. I'm sorry. I don't want to sound condescending. I have a hard time talking about it without sounding condescending. I'm trying not to.
I think it'd be there has to be an explanation for everything. I mean, to me, you can't throw out science. You know, and so are we affecting things mentally on a quantum level? Is that actually happening? And is are we interconnected? Is what we think of as the divine actually our interconnection affecting things?
Right.
You know.
Maybe we just can't measure it yet with science.
Some sort of collective unconscious. Yeah.
So you mentioned that you had your.
So
your,
let me ask you this: after this show and a couple shows, are you guys going to say, "Oh yeah, that Ricky, he was full of shit"?
No. And honestly, here's that actually leads into my next question because I'm curious. So you say you had your religion and your upbringing and such sort of ripped away in college. How were you brought up?
I was a United Methodist.
Okay.
That leaned more, that our church leaned more charismatic, a slight bit with the youth group in it because the youth director leaned that way as well.
Yeah.
I remember I still have on my iPods certain Christian music that I loved from back then, and I listen to it once in a while because it's very nostalgic for me and affects me sometimes.
So, take me through. Kind of how, take us through like what changed for you, what pulled you away specifically from, you know, the Methodist Church into this sort of more inexplainable, less organized spirituality that you feel now.
One of the things that when I way back when I one of my prayers was I want to know the truth, tell me the truth. And it wasn't too long after that I found a book that was like Who Wrote the Bible. And it talks about, like, I think it was the first four books of the Bible was actually pieced together from different writings.
Yeah, there's at least four authors they can,
Yeah, and some of those, you know, were based on his, you know, what they thought of back then, the way they thought back then. And so because I'm a student of history, you know, a self-proclaimed student of history, I know that men write history. I know that they are swayed by what their own belief system is and by the winners. Yep. You know, I forget what the story is, but there's two different versions of a story. One was written before the Babylonian, they were, you know, incarceration when the Jews were in Babylon. Mm-hmm. One was written after. The one before had no mention of the devil, of the Satan or whatever. The one after they had been exposed to Zoroastrianism, all of a sudden there's a devil in there. They're like, well, we like that. We're going to borrow that from your religion.
Mm-hmm.
So once I started finding stuff out like that, I'm like, oh, now everything is suspect.
And so that's interesting because for a lot of us, not just the three of us here, but a lot of people we've spoken to who identify as either atheist or agnostic, that moment for them was when they pivoted toward none of it is real. And yet you still felt something, I'm assuming.
Well, I floundered for a long time. It was there was a book by Joseph Heller who wrote, Catch 22.
Yeah.
He wrote God Knows, and it's a story of David. And at the very end, when David is close to death, they're giving him the young virgin woman to sleep with him, and he's like, it's kind of a comedy book the whole way through. For once, I'm able to read it all through and go, oh, that's how the story goes. That's the timeline. But at the very end, him and God had been on the outs and they hadn't talked to him for a while or whatever. He goes, they keep giving me the girl. All I want is my God back. You know, and it's a sad resignation of, and yet we're not simpatico. Same thing for me. I was kind of floundering there for a while going, well, I don't have any kind of belief system here and I miss it, but I know too much.
Tim had that happen. And you said you kind of had that, you missed that.
You mourned the loss.
Yeah, I mourned the loss. Yeah. I think for a long time, and I drifted away from it, but for a long time, I think I believed very similarly to you, in that I guess I would define it as a theist. I believed that there was some sort of higher power and that religion constituted one of many paths to find it. And I don't know if that's a decent way of describing where you're at.
Religion is a system of beliefs. Without trying to be offensive, atheism is a system of beliefs. I believe there's nothing there. This is the way it is. And because of your perspective, things are colored. Well, I'm going to see more and more of this, more things that support my belief system. If I'm a Christian, I'm going to see things that support my belief system. If I'm Jewish, if I'm Muslim, or if I'm I'm Indian or, you know, Hindu or whatever, I'm going to see things that support my belief system. You know, you can even look at that with Democratic and Republican. Well, I'm going to see things that support my belief system. Mm-hmm. Even in your news station, I'm going to see stuff that supports mine.
So it's
all about perspective.
Yeah.
The human brain, I mean, we're wired for pattern recognition and to trust personal anecdotes over research or, you know, things we're shown to be true with hard data and with research. If it doesn't confirm to what our experience is, even if our experience is an outlier, it's really hard for us to believe in that thing. It's an uphill battle for our brains.
Well, and I think on top of that, you know, if you've got, you know, you what it is that you're confirming is the unknown. I mean, it is literally the unknown. I will say, when you say that atheism is a system of beliefs, I do think that's true for Gnostic atheism, which I don't think many people are. I don't think many of us are saying, I'm 100% sure there's no God. I would even rate myself at 99.9. You know, like, I still leave a little bit of room for knowing that I can't know everything. But I think that unknown factor really, really plays into the whole, it's confirmation bias to some degree, but that pattern recognition and a self-soothing almost in that sense of like, I don't know what it is. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what happens after we die. I don't know any of this. And either I am told, you know, by my religion or just what I feel in my heart is going to happen. And then I see that in the world because that helps reassure me and get through what is, to be perfectly frank, human existence can be rough. So it's helpful to have that built in.
And well, I think that I think nobody can say that, oh no, I know for 100%. And if you do, that is definitely a blind faith.
Yes.
The best that we can all do is, this is my best guess, and this is the one that I'm going to go with because
this feels true to me. Yeah.
Or this is what the data suggests. You know, this is what the data suggests. This is what, you know, I mean, that's what it is for me with atheism is if there was proof in magic or in a god, I would be like, well, shit, we got to consider this stuff. We got to measure the output here and, you know, figure out how the fuck there's a god now. And
yeah. And yet I've said before, like, I mean, I don't believe in ghosts. I just really want them to be real. And if I ever saw one, it wouldn't matter if no one else believed me. I mean, you guys would laugh at me forever, but I know I would know I saw a fucking ghost and I'd be like, well, they're real. I mean, it doesn't matter. So that goes back to what you were saying about personal anecdotes mattering more than any other measurable data, which I think really factors into a lot of religion versus spirituality.
Nobody likes hearing your personal experience isn't valid or doesn't count. That's not
even helpful. Then you don't know. Even then, if you have a burning bush, angel on the mount experience, you don't know that this is not your friend's messing with you or some other being.
This is your psychotic break.
Well, if you know my friends, then you would know that it is my friends messing with me.
Yeah, right. Putting acid in your drink.
Yeah, no kidding.
So now
let me jump real quick though, because I love this book. If you like history at all, and I'm assuming that you, if you like religious history at all, there's a book called by Reza Aslan called Zealot.
Yeah.
And it is. Do you know it?
I've heard of it. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, it's wonderful, and I recommend listening to it because he reads it. And I was working out in the gym listening to this book, and he talks more about what is going on leading up to the time of Christ and then afterwards and what's going on around him historically. And one of my aha moments was they talk about how it's pretty much the Gospels are a love letter to the Romans because they were all written right after Jerusalem was razed by Rome. Is it 90 AD or is it 70 AD? 70 AD.
I do not know.
And there were two different factions of Christians. There were those that were actually following Peter and James living in Jerusalem. So all of those writings gone, except for the ones that made it out, the ones that we actually read. They talk about how Peter was the head of the church. It was actually James, the brother of Jesus, and it was about how his teachings were more in line with what they say Jesus' teachings was. Now, the thing that blew my mind was Peter didn't get along with them at all. And I remember reading this growing up, how he was saying, you know, there are people out there who say that you should circumcise yourself. I think they should go all the way and castrate themselves. And I'm like, oh, yeah, those people are bastards. Until he points out in his book that he's talking about Peter. He's talking about James. It's like, oh, people are people.
Yeah. And
so if you want a good history book about what's going on around that time, that one's really juicy.
Interesting.
There you go.
That book, I heard of it because there was a famous clip that got played around the internet for a while because he was interviewed about his book on Fox News, and basically the only thing the commentator on Fox News wanted to ask him was how he, as a Muslim, could write a book about Jesus. And
Jesus.
It was just like, it was one of the worst examples of an interview you will ever see.
And it's his job. It's like, I study religious history. This is my job. This is what I do. It has nothing to do with that thing.
So
that's the same reason I found it.
So I was going to say, so as you are obviously very interested in religious history and other religions, and you actually work with an Islamic Relief group, right? Islamic Relief USA?
I work with Islamic Relief USA. They're a humanitarian disaster relief organization working here in the United States, helping people in the United States and around the world. If ever there's a problem, like say the flooding in Louisiana, fires in California or other disasters, the Red Cross will go in, they'll assess what they need, and then they'll contact IRUSA and they go in, putting boots on the ground. They were up in Flint, Michigan, delivering water.
They help people regardless of gender and race, religion, all of it. They just help people.
They don't proselytize, they don't do anything, they don't go, ding dong, hi, we're Muslim, take this.
Right.
They just do what they need to do.
Like what Catholic charity should something, be.
Yeah, well, and they're not everybody that works there is not all Muslim. I've met Catholics that work there. I've met Christians and different things like that. So yeah,
when you tell people that you work for this group, do you face bizarre, you know, misplaced racism and Islamophobia just based on the name?
You know, you would think that, and I would think that, but it's not been my experience.
I kind of
hem and haw. When I first started doing this, I kind of started hem and hawing about it, or just kind of, I would have this whole spiel. It's like, you've heard of the Catholic Relief Fund, right? And they work with different people, and they help everybody. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, yeah, we have. Well, I work with the Islamic Relief Fund, and da-da-da-da-da-da. And I'm expecting this you know, look of, oh, what? But it never happens. So I started amending my speech of going, yeah, I do this. And people were like, yeah, that's great. They approached myself and my, I have another podcast that's on hiatus right now. Not sure to do it yet. It's called Success Freaks. It's a comedic motivational podcast. We talk about everything from businessy stuff to relationship stuff to whatever it is that we're going through so that we can, you know, share that with our people saying this is how we dealt with it. Well, the guy approached us and said, hey, we would like to sponsor your show. And he's like, I'm the poster child for this. I'm a white guy from D.C. and I'm a Muslim. Hmm. He's like, we like what you do. And so we vetted each other. You know, my first question was, have you heard our show? You know that we're very pro-gay rights and we're all this and this.
Right.
And this. He's like, yes, we know. I'm like, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
So and then we looked into them as well. And part of our deal was they would put commercials on our show. But part of our deal is once a year, we would go and interview them. So I went up into Alexandria, Virginia, right next to D.C., mm-hmm. into their offices, and interviewed everybody. And I saw what Malcolm X saw when he went to Mecca. People of all different colors worshiping in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
There were some women with hijabs. There were women with their long hair. There were some with loose clothing. There were some with tight clothing. And I even asked them about it. What is this? I don't understand. They're like, do you know how you worship in different ways? I'm like, yeah. He's like, so do we. We all have mm-hmm. different ways of doing this. It's like, oh. And I talk nerd stuff with these people. We talk football. I mean, these are American Muslims.
They're people.
Muslims.
Yeah.
They're people.
They're fucking Americans.
And
I don't understand how people get this so twisted in their heads.
I totally understand because they don't know. There was a fear. I mean, even I would see them sometimes before and go, oh, okay, I just don't know. I'd feel bad about it, but, you know, now when I see Muslims, I want to go up and go, Assalamu alaikum. And they look at me like I'm kind of weird and go,
Alaikum salam.
So, yeah, I've learned too much from my exposure to these people. And I got to tell you, the podcast, the What a Relief podcast, is probably one of the proudest things I do.
It's What a Relief?
Yeah, it is the What a Relief podcast. So What a Relief, you can just look for that or mm-hmm. go to irusa.org slash podcasts.
Excellent.
Plural. I don't know why they did that. But we've got, I don't know how many shows now. We've done it for a year.
Is that something that you're doing, you only do one podcast a year, or do you do that regularly?
No. Regularly. They put them out like once a week.
Okay.
We just did a 24-hour podcast, too.
Oof.
Where we had, a whole thing, and I've got to get them to redo it, because they started at midnight. I'm like, dude, I'm already tired.
Yeah.
You need to start this in the morning. It doesn't matter 6 a.m., when you do it. 24 hours. I was a mess. I was like, at some point at 3 in the morning, I'm like, I got to get sleep now, because I can't do this. And then I was fine.
So when you describe yourself to people, do you describe yourself as spiritual or religious? And it doesn't have to be an either or if you have a blend of the two. But we've found a lot of people who shy away from the term religious tend to prefer, you know, I'm spiritual. I have a lot of that.
I would my glib response that I just thought of is like, I would say connected. Hmm. That's it. That's what I am. You know, I appreciate religion for what it is and what it does. I appreciate spirituality, but I'm connected. To me, it's connection to the divine, to the source, to whatever that is that makes me smile in the morning and throughout the day. And if I'm fooling myself, you know what? I'm enjoying my life.
Do what thou wilt, harm none or whatever. Like, I don't... If people have religion and it's a personal thing and it's not... like fucking up other people's lives and causing them to like shoot people and bomb stuff, I feel that's at least benign. It's funny you mentioned at the beginning when we were talking about this kind of a Unitarian type thing. Your response definitely sounds like a lot of Unitarian Universalists I've met,
mm-hmm.
where they're like not agnostic, but you know, open to the idea of a lot of different things, and this.
They just want to learn.
One of the you know, tenets or pillars or whatever of Unitarian Universalism is recognizing an inherent interconnectedness of people in life. And I think that can be a spiritual thing, a religious thing, and a completely and totally just scientific thing.
I like the term connected, Ricky, because I've always... I really dislike the word spiritual, or people talking about secular spiritual... whatever. I've never liked that, because to me that implies their spirit, you know, and that just to me seems supernatural. And we've actually discussed this on the show before, and Nick and I have talked about it a lot at home, where he thinks I'm objectively wrong, but I like the idea of connected, because I mean I've felt that. I've been out at Renaissance Festival in Minnesota and felt something more than myself, more than, you know, the sum of our parts, but it doesn't ever feel supernatural to me. I think for me that's the distinction why I don't like the word spiritual, but I do like the word connected. I'm gonna steal that.
Cool.
Do you
because clearly Ricky created that word.
He did.
He did
on the seventh day, actually. Trademark. Is when he created
I channeled it, because I am, what's the word, connected.
So if you had to pick, This is a prelude to our five questions. If you had to choose a religion, organized religion to be part of, let's say President Bannon forces us all to pick a religion, what religion would you pick?
Well, more of a philosophy. For one of the first things I found, and that was after a while, having moved on beyond Christianity, was Taoism. Mm-hmm. I like the concept of Buddhism, but it's too much of a denial of self. Taoism is accepting of everything.
Taoism is what I was thinking for you,
So that would be more, and it's more of a philosophy than a religion. You can, I've studied international healing Tao energy work in Thailand under Muntak Chia, but that could be used with anything. That's just energy work.
Mm-hmm.
I was particularly fond of Taoism when I was... I think that's a good.
When you were floundering,
when I was trying to figure shit out, and Taoism was one that I found appealing, and I may not have settled with it, but I still think Taoism is a really nice life,
a neat set of ideas.
It's a nice life map, I guess, is the way I look at it.
Mm-hmm. One of the hardest things I had with it was trying to find a book that I could understand that explained it all. And, you read one, the I Ching, and I'm like, I don't get it. You read the Tao, the Tao Pu, and you're like, okay, but you kind of, it sounds like it's all inside jokes, and I don't get it.
Right.
I did find a book by Diane Dreyer called The Tao of Inner Peace that kind of laid everything out. I'm like, this is more of a layman's thing that I can wrap my brain around as a beginner. So if anybody's looking for that,
have you read The Tao of Pooh?
It's what he mentioned.
Oh, yeah. I thought he said.
I did. I may have read the Day of Piglet. But
there was also the Day of the Tay. Tay,
yeah,
Day
just
of Piglet.
That. Yeah.
I know, but I'm just curious. Like, what's did either one of those feel? I always felt like the sequel must have felt more jokey. You know, like it's.
I don't recall. It's been so long since I've read them. And I have a hard time with that. There are book series that I love that mm-hmm. I, when they mention, hey, remember when we did this thing way back in here? And I'll be like, nope.
I don't remember.
It's been so long.
The someone once, when I was in college and I was a Wiccan, and someone told me I should read Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, which that was kind of my experience with that too. It felt not in-jokey, but just like, I don't really do engines or like motorcycles. Right. So I feel like this isn't a book for me. And
it was, I read that in college part one.
Mm-hmm.
It was recommended to me by a close, at the time, Christian friend who used it as his metaphor for explaining the philosophical differences between PCs and Macs. in the book Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, there's the one guy who has his hermetically sealed BMW that never needs to be maintenance, and when it does, he takes it into the shop and has a pro do it. And then there's the other guy that has his beat up bike, and he has a method to his repairs and maintenance and all that. And it's a part of the ritual for it and all that. It's a closeness to his machine, and like, I've just felt like that's such a PC Mac thing. Like, just ever since then, it's just stuck with me.
Ricky,
I was going to ask. Have you ever, since we're talking about different things, have you ever seen the movie What the Bleep Do We Know, and what are your thoughts?
No, I haven't.
It's basically, there's stories in it, but it's also a bunch of interviews with quantum physicists.
Yeah.
Huh. Yes.
So I'd recommend watching it.
Yeah, that sounds interesting.
And then I would love to have that conversation.
I have seen it. It has just been, once.
It has like a notable narrator, doesn't it? Isn't it?
Yeah. I'm going to look it up while we get to five questions.
So yeah, before we get to five questions, there's one last thing I want to ask you before we move on.
All right.
I would say, you know, the vast majority of our listeners identify as atheist. Is there something that you, I don't know, that you want to say or that you want to communicate about just kind of your worldview?
Yeah, I want to say something to atheists. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for questioning. Thank you for making other people think about everything. One thing that I heard, and here's the plus thing that I've heard about atheists is that as far as the way they raise their children, the way they raise their children and the way they are, they tend to be more harm no others, you know, mm-hmm. do right, etc., than people who follow the religion. For some reason, it's the people following the religion is like, I got to pass, so let me screw this guy.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And it's just, it's studies have shown that actually it's the atheists who are the ones that are on the up and up and doing the right thing and helping other people out. Now, there's no reason other than, hey, look, I want to be a good person, because there's no, hey, worried about getting into heaven or anything like that. It's like, no, we're all here together. Let's respect each other. So
and that's,
my thing is thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. That's nice.
On behalf of atheists.
Yeah. You're welcome. I do think there is a reason though. And you hit it right on the head, is that there isn't anything else for us. The way we view the world is this is all we get. So why would you waste that being hurtful to anyone? Why wouldn't you value human life and love everybody and just
As we discussed 2 weeks ago, punching Nazis.
You know, I can value a Nazi's life and still want to punch him in his fucking Nazi face. I'm just saying. I don't want to kill him. Just want to make him hurt a little.
There's this black guy that has befriended KKK members.
Mm-hmm.
And he says he's gone in and he's just befriended them. He's not pushed anything on them. He's not trying to change their mind. It's just kind of like exposing them to what it means to have a black friend. And 200 or so of them have left the KKK because of their relationship with this guy.
Of course.
So the reason I bring this up is, you know, punching Nazis in the junk, sure, that sounds like a great thing, but is it going to really help in the long run? Sure, it's going to make me feel good.
World War II,
and, and if it's just, you know, for sport, then of course there should be a video game. But how are we going to do this? I mean, it's just like... I a lot of us fall on one side or the other side of the political spectrum, especially with what's going on today.
It's hard not to be polarized today.
If you really want to change things and the way things are, and you see how reactionary he is, do you think the best thing is to go and say, I hate Trump, and let's just, you know, throw out all these evil memes about him, et cetera, et cetera? I mean, yes, we should stand up. Yes, we should stand up for our rights and our beliefs, et cetera, et cetera. But show respect to the office. It's still the president. And you're not going to win him over by calling him a douchebag and making him feel vindicated about everything else he wants to do to you. It's like the only way you're going to do it is go, respectfully, sir, blah, 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 blah.
I will say that so far, calling him a douchebag seems to get the most reaction out of him because he's such a child. But yeah, I do see what you're saying.
Is that what you're looking at? Yeah, but what's your end game?
Be the change you want to see in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, who is it?
I think we can all get behind that.
Sure. You know, I think this is a long topic for another episode, for sure.
We'd love to have you back, Ricky, but you know what it's time for? It's time for five questions. That's right. And now we have...
I'm nervous. I don't know.
No, don't be nervous. No, you got it, kid. You got the moxie. You got the stuff.
You got the stuff.
You want to be a star, don't you?
Wait, no, wrong quote.
All right. Question number one. Nick Glover, hit it.
What is a movie you'll stop and watch anytime it's on? And stop and watch has an asterisk next to it because Netflix and streaming stuff, obviously, you know, what's a background movie?
Galaxy Quest.
Oh yeah, that's a great background music movie.
It's like the second best Star Trek movie ever made.
I would say, second or third. It's hard because there's Khan and there's Voyage Home and then there's Galaxy Quest.
Right.
And those three are up there. The good stuff.
I like the first reboot.
No, I did too.
Yeah.
I agree. Okay.
All right, question number two, Tim.
Question number two, what is your geekiest or most prized possession?
Probably something Harry Potter. I have a bunch of Harry Potter Running Club medallions.
Ooh.
Do you know what it is, Harry Potter?
No, I don't. What is this running Harry Potter thing?
It is a virtual running club. And what you do is they come out with a running thing. It's like the Half Prince half marathon and the something something 5K.
Yeah, yeah.
You basically pay your $25 and they send you this. Mm-hmm. And they're like, you can run this. It's they'll let you know it's a 5K, it's a half marathon, it's this, it's that. So you can do that walking it, you can do it, break it up, you can do it inside, you can do it outside. You cannot do it. It doesn't matter. But the thing is, if you set it up, they do it in conjunction with Charity Miles. And that is on your phone. So as you're moving, it's showing how many miles you go, and you pick a thing that you want, what charity you wanted to go for, and some corporation pays money towards it for what you've done.
That's wonderful.
You're signed up with your house, so you're making points for your house.
Oh.
I did spy on you a little bit on Facebook, and I saw that you are a fellow Gryffindor. So
I am. Well, here's the story behind that. For many, many years, when it first came out, I went into Pottermore, and when they had four questions, Slytherin was where I was for many years. And then recently, I went in, they're like, what's your username? And I had everything else but the username. They're like, okay, you got to redo it.
Yeah. Yeah, I took the test over and over and over because I was convinced I was a Ravenclaw, and straight Hermione style was like, I will answer however this needs to be answered to get the best result. And every time it was like, you're a Gryffindor, stupid. So I'm making my peace with it.
Yeah, I have similarly made peace with the fact that I am incredibly a Slytherin.
Yes,
and
true.
And
noodles.
No.
No step snack.
Yeah, no step. And that's not an evil thing. That's if you ever want confirmation of whether or not I'm a Slytherin, we just play a board game that's competitive against each other, and that will answer all your questions.
I have made peace with the fact that I really love the Harry Potter franchise and don't give a shit what house I'm in. So
that's what most people who are closet Hufflepuffs say, Tim.
Well, yeah, Hufflepuff.
Question
number
three.
One of my heroes, Lin-Manuel Miranda, is Slytherin.
Oh yeah, that makes sense.
Ambitious as fuck.
Yeah,
of course he is.
I would love to be a Hufflepuff. I like staying Hufflepuff.
That's
a good word.
My favorite house.
Deadpool is Hufflepuff.
Yeah.
All right. Question number three: which supernatural, mythical, or all-powerful being and/or deity do you wish was real?
Say it again.
Which all-powerful, supernatural, or magical deity and or being do you wish was real?
I really have no idea. My first thought, my first smart-ass answer was Crom, but no. Then to hell with you.
That'd be a hard, hard life.
Yeah, I know, right?
We've had people answer, you know, dragons or...
Wizards and...
Yeah.
And the Force.
Before, yeah, the, well, the Force would be pretty cool. But that's so, that is so Taoist if you look at the way they are.
Yeah. Oh,
like,
yeah.
Oh, look, this is happening. Yeah. Oh, look, this is happening.
Like, hey, I can figure out what books George Lucas read as each movie comes out. Right.
Have you seen George Lucas in Love?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, wonderful.
Answer the question, Robinson.
I said the Force. That's fine, the Force.
All right.
You mentioned Crom. I got to say, have you seen the new footage of the Conan MMO... like survival game that they just came out with?
No.
Okay, so it's like a survival style third person game like Rust or the other like zombie games where you're, there's resources you can build, you're in a world, there's other people, you can die.
This war of mine.
It's in the Conan, you know, world, and the NDAs just got nulled so everyone can talk about it. And so the first thing everyone talks about is that in the character creation screen, when you're customizing your character's appearance, there is a dong size slider. And dongs, dicks have separate jiggle physics than the testicles. And so,
oh my God.
There are like 20-minute videos of just like no loincloth buff Conan dudes running around a desert, like murdering monsters while like just fucking jiggle dick like all over the place. It's super funny.
Like Watchmen.
A little more animated than Watchmen.
That was one of the best parts or of like Watchmen.
Thank
Nick,
you.
Question
thank
four.
You for that, you know, segue.
That was a great segue.
Question number four. Say religion is gone. What is the biggest problem that humanity now faces?
I think that a similar thing that I came to grips with when I'm clean and sober for 13 years now. And at some point when I started doing some fucked up things again, it's like, oh, I'm still an asshole. So without religion, it's how is man going to take care of himself and you know, help his fellow man out?
Mm-hmm.
Is everybody going to be like an atheist and say, hey, look, we got to get this shit together because otherwise we're just screwed and we got one shot? Or are they going to be like, you know, it's going to be mayhem. Who cares now? You know, there is no quote unquote checks and balances. So my concern is what's going to happen then?
Yeah.
You know.
Fair.
I just thought of like four Hamilton quotes during that entire answer.
Tell me.
All right, question number five. Share?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. Humanity, don't throw away your shot. Is everyone going to rise up? History has its eyes on us. And there was, right at the end there, you said something about people needing to... I lost it. Damn it, I should have written it down.
All right, Clover.
Question
number five. What is your favorite quote?
Oscar Wilde. All of us are in the gutter, but some of us are looking at the stars.
Oh, I love that.
Oscar Wilde was great.
Yeah, he was.
Ahead of his time, unfortunately for him.
No kidding.
Jesus Christ. He was, there's so many quotes that are his, and then there's like the ones where I'm not sure if they are him or not, but they're just, I just don't care. I need to think about it. So
like Mark Twain. Yeah.
Well, more like the urban legend that may or may not be true that his last words were either that wallpaper goes or I do.
Yeah, or drapes, I think.
The drapes, yeah. Whatever it is, yeah. Just fantastic.
Totally.
Ricky, thank you so much for being on our show. This was a really wonderful talk.
Super interesting.
Thank you.
Yeah. We always love to have, you know, it's always interesting to have non-atheists on the show and really get some outside perspective from, you know, what we usually have for our own, you know, worldview. So thank you for sharing. If people can find the Islamic Relief USA podcast that you do at
irusa.org/podcasts with an
okay.
S on hand.
And then your other podcast that you do is called
Success Freaks.
Successfreaks.com. And always TortugaTwins.com, because you are, as we discussed, the cool but rude Tortuga.
Boom, baby.
And thank you very much for listening, you guys. You can support us on Patreon, follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and do all those things. Tell your friends about us. You know, tell your weirdly right conservative religious aunt about us. I don't care. Like, make her listen. We're living in a new world order, and we all got to stick in this together, guys. So thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Bye. Ciao.
Oh, Ricky, you're so funny.
Stop. He's heard it, I'm sure.
He's a Tortuga. They love repetitive jokes.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
Need more Geeks Without God? Go to our website, read our blog posts, find us on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter at Geeks Without God. Social media!
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
It's not live. Excellent. People can rewind.